Blog Talk Radio.
Son of a bitch! What's up, y'all? My apologies for the late start. Fucking computer updates, dog. I can't take it. I can't take it. Man, the technology issues I've had this week are ridiculous. So, obviously, the my other computer shit to bed this week, as you all know, because we did a two-hour show twice this week, and I had to ship out the computer to get fixed. So we got a backup to the backup, because the original backup is a Mac, and the Mac has totally different editing equipment that I didn't have enough time to learn to get all the videos uploaded. So then, you know, I started the PC today like I usually do for the show, and it hits me with the longest computer update in human history, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, fuck, okay, fuck. And then at the last second, I'm like, fuck this. It's still updating, by the way. Like, it's still doing it, and I'm like, okay, whatever, let me just break out my Mac, and if I have clips that I have to do, I'll find another way to do them. And whatever. So anyway, here I am. Here I am with the wrong computer for the show, but I'm here doing the show, and I'm still fucking 8 minutes late. Hey, like them apples. Anyway, I better jump right into it because I lost 9 minutes, bitch, but I got a lot of stuff to get to. So just a quick little thing to tell you about what you have to look forward to. President Obama, did he endorse somebody on the Democratic side? Maybe. Who? Do the American people trust the most with the military? Interesting poll there. And later on, undocumented immigrants, just how important are they to the U.S. economy? Now, obviously, people on the right think that they're a drain, they're parasites, they're moochers, they're the worst. I actually have hard numbers for you as to how much they contribute to the economy. And you're not going to be surprised to learn they indeed are the opposite of moochers. Okay, so without further ado, let's get started here, and I want to kick it off with President Obama and what he's up to. President Obama's preference in the 2016 presidential race finally leaked its way to the media. So The Hill reports here, President Obama urged a closed-door gathering of Democratic donors to rally around Hillary Clinton, telling them Bernie Sanders' campaign is nearing its end. Obama acknowledged that Clinton suffers from a perceived lack of authenticity, but called it an overrated political virtue. Obama said that his predecessor, George W. Bush, was thought to be an authentic politician, but reminded donors he successfully ran against Bush's record in his first presidential campaign. Wow. So this is President Obama meeting with big money donors. Some of the plates at this gathering and this dinner cost up to $33,000. This is him telling them, okay, let's get serious here. We're all going to line up behind Hillary, right? And I know, maybe the Democratic base and maybe many people in the country don't like her. They don't think she's authentic when you look at the polls. She's super low when it comes to trustworthiness. People view her as untrustworthy. But he's like, whatever, man. Whatever. He says that's something that's easy to overcome. Authenticity. Keeping it real, being honest. Overrated in politics. People vote Bush was authentic. So what? See, I ended up being able to defeat him running on his legacy. So authenticity is overrated. Man, that is so telling. Well, number one, what I would argue is Bush may have appeared authentic. He wasn't authentic. And number two, Hillary is also not authentic, and perception reasons, it's a problem because she's not authentic. It's a problem because when she talks about the stuff she talks about today, when she tries to pretend like she's as progressive as Bernie Sanders, it's not true. She's lying. I'm totally against the TPP, I swear. Me? In favor of free trade? Are you crazy? Well, we have a history of you being for NAFTA, and we have a history of you pushing for the TPP 45 times. And now you're like, I'm so totally against it. Let me tell you. Keystone. There's that great clip of Keystone. Hey, are you in favor of Keystone? I'll get back to you. I don't know. And then later she's like, oh, yeah, I'm totally against it, bro. I don't know what you guys are talking about. So this now Bernie Sanders has pushed her in this direction. But the thing is with Hillary, if you believe it, you're a sucker. Or you just don't know the facts of her career. You don't know her history. And you don't know how much money industry gives her. And isn't it amazing that he made these comments to those same donors? He's like, don't worry. We can override the authenticity thing. Just give her more money. That's the whole point of his speech. He's like, yeah, no, come on. We'll rally behind her, you give her money, and we'll override the fact that people don't fucking trust her. No, but see, that you're doing it right now! That's the reason we don't trust her! The big money donors... Okay. The thing is, when you look at President Obama, when you look at Hillary Clinton, when you look at Bill Clinton, this is today's Democratic Party. They are super corrupt. Now, the Republicans are even more corrupt. But the thing about a politician like Obama is he plays within the rules, prefers Hillary to somebody like Bernie is she's of the same mindset and of the same mold, and if anything, even further to the right than he is in the context of this spectrum. So Obama looks at Hillary and thinks, well, she's not going to blow up the system. She's not going to get the big money out of the political system. What she's going to do is try to be somewhat liberal within the system of the establishment and corporate money running the show. And Obama views that as like, oh, that's pragmatism. That's just accepting the reality of politics for what it is and then working to try to make it, the world a better place. So he has this view where the system being corrupt is just an of course. Like, it just is what it is. Like, what are you going to do? You have to play within that system. And Hillary agrees with that. And Hillary partakes in that. Now, Bernie Sanders comes along and he's like, fuck that. I want to change the whole system. You got to at least fight for it. You have to. We can't keep going like this. Today's Democratic Party is like an old-school Republican Party because the money has watered them down so much in their so-called progressive positions. Obama looks at that and he's like, oh, naive idealist. He's like a child. You know, you got to accept the reality of the system for what it is, and then you work within that system. He's like, fuck that. I don't want to work within that system. Well, I was like, well, then somebody like me can't support you. And therein lies the difference between the Obama, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton wing of the Democratic Party and, you know, the other Democratic senators congressmen save the Progressive Caucus versus the Bernie Sanders wing, Keith Ellison wing, Alan Grayson wing, you name it, where they're like, no, I want to change the fucking system. This is not okay the way that this works, and this is not what the American people want. So there you have it. He comes out and he says this. Now, many people, when Obama first ran, they kind of fell for his rhetoric. But if you actually go back and listen now, in fact, I challenge you to go back and listen to some of his speeches and go back and listen to some of the debates, if you want, between Barack Obama, Senator Obama at the time, and Hillary Clinton. And what you'll find is he actually kind of was clearly more of the Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton model. He was big on rhetoric, like flowery rhetoric, like, oh, yeah, hope and change, and we need to break down the barriers that are holding people back, and this is the same kind of stuff Hillary says. And you'll notice when they talk like that, it's vague niceties. It lacks policy specifics. So Obama was clearly, looking back at it, more of the kind of politician that Hillary Clinton is and Bill Clinton is. Whereas Bernie Sanders, you know he ain't fucking around because he says it every single fucking speech. I want a political revolution. We got to get the money out of the system. The billionaires have corrupted this goddamn thing. We got to get universal health care. We got to get universal education. And he's giving you the details. Obama looks at it, oh, stop it. Why not just give me some watered-down, vague, generalized comments with nice words that allow me to pretend like I'm super on the side of the people as I cut deals behind the scenes with corporations. And then I want to leave you with one more thing here. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest weighed in on this. He said, President Obama made a case that would be familiar to all of you, which is that our success in November in electing a Democratic president is dependent on the commitment and ability of the Democratic Party to come together behind our nominee. Now, if you don't speak politician, let me break this down for you. What he's saying is, come on, guys, we have to pick a candidate that can get the entire Democratic Party behind her. And what that means is not just the people, not just the voters, the Democratic establishment, the actual party itself, the people in Washington, and the Democratic donors. Basically, this is a backhanded, snub of Bernie here to say, well, us winning in November is contingent upon the commitment and ability of the Democratic Party to come together behind our nominee. In other words, Bernie Sanders, he's not going to get the Democratic politicians behind him. He's not going to get the Democratic donors behind him. Therefore, he's not going to get the Democratic Party behind him. So, got to go for Hillary because she plays ball. Yet again, this is all you need to know about today's Democratic Party. And furthermore, when you look at President Obama, this really dispels the notion, to steal from Marco Rubio, that he is a progressive. No, the best I'll give Obama is he's as far left as he can be while accepting the framework of the system. So accepting corporate money, accepting the establishment runs everything, accepting that it's super corrupt. He's as far left as you can be within that system, which is still overall center-right and pro-corporate and pro-establishment. And Hillary Clinton's of the same model and mode as him. So that's who he loves. And there's no more question about it. It's perfectly clear now. Okay, now, let's pivot here and go to who the fucking people love. Because, you know, that should probably be more important in a democracy. So Reuters Ipsos released a new poll on who the American people trusted the most with the military. And here are the results. In dead last, the Marcobot with 16%. That's unsurprising because he looks like a toddler and acts like one. John Kasich, second to last. This one I'm actually surprised by, particularly because the military is right-leaning, and he seems to be a relatively sane Republican, so I would think that he would get more. But maybe a lot of them don't even know who the fuck he is, which is certainly a possibility. So Kasich has 19%. Ted Cruz has 20%, third to last. Donald Trump, 26%. He's the highest-ranking Republican. All right, Hillary Clinton, 31%, which means number one is Bernie Sanders. 38% of the military, or I'm sorry, 38% of the people in the United States of America trust him with the military more than any other candidate. Now, when you hear this, you're probably not all that surprised because Bernie Sanders is a rational human being. When I read the article on this in Reuters, they even had a line about how they were surprised. Maybe shocking! Ooh, look at this! The Democratic Socialist! Bernie Sanders? They trust him with the military? Bernie Sanders? So they couldn't hold it back. Like, oh, what? Really? So seriously? This is not establishment bubble wisdom. Oh, my God. And our response to that is, you idiots. You don't get it. They don't want to use their mind. They're stuck in that Washington bubble. They're stuck in that establishment mindset. And they don't get that to normal people, they're not looking for a commander-in-chief who's like, oh, yeah, puff out your chest and be tough and, you know, go around and bomb shit. Even if we're not sure if we got the right country or the right people, bomb them anyway. Strong military. Yeah. No, normal people are like, who do I trust with the military? Who do I trust? So in other words, who can you rely on to not do this adventurism and, you know, stupid imperialistic actions around the world? Well, there's no doubt about that one. In fact, Bernie Sanders probably should have won by a wider margin because he's the guy who's been saying from day one of his campaign, very simply, I'm not going to just send our military to fight other people's battles. You know, I'm not going to get bogged down in between a Sunni Shia war. Why would I do that? You know, I'm not going to send more people to Iraq, more people to Afghanistan. I'm not going to put our people in harm's way unless it is absolutely necessary. Where the other candidates, virtually all of them at one time or another, they don't even have the pretense of not treating our soldiers like pawns in a chess game. Like, they just, sometimes they just let you peek behind the curtain, and they'll give speeches where they're just like, and what we need to do for geostrategic reasons is we need to make sure that in Syria we take back Raqqa, and we got to make sure that we're against the Assad regime, who's bad, and the rebels, and ISIS, but we got to find a third way to move forward. It's like, you haven't even established why we need to do that. You're just saying we need to do that. So, and oftentimes it does come down to this idea of the geopolitical chessboard, us versus Russia in the Cold War mindset, and who's going to have more power and control and access to resources and business interests. And sometimes, like Hillary Clinton's military advisors released a letter going after Bernie Sanders where they literally said in the letter, Hillary Clinton views the globe like a chessboard. Fuck, can you say that as a positive thing? Like, oh, okay, I'm going to move my rook to over here in order to block out Serbia, and like, what? Why? Whereas Bernie Sanders comes along, and he's more of, you know, the position that I believe in on foreign policy, which is, hey, how about we only use our military in self-defense? If there's going to be an attack against us, and we need to help ourselves and stop the attack. That used to be the common sense position. Now, all of a sudden, that's portrayed as radical in the mainstream, to the point where somebody comes along and advocates that, and they're surprised that most people trust him with the fucking military. God, it's so backwards, man. This idea that we should be the world policeman and we should run everything, it's so deeply baked into the minds of the idiots in the media establishment, in the political establishment, and in the donor class. And it's so monumentally backwards. Now, again, don't get me wrong, because sometimes people like to strawman my position and say, yeah, well, that means that Kyle's saying if there's a genocide somewhere, he wants to stay out of it, and that makes him a bad person. No. I've been crystal clear from day one on this. If there's a genocide happening somewhere, I have no problem with, and I would encourage, the United Nations to get involved and prevent it. But see, the difference is, when the U.S. acts alone, when any nation acts alone, you're going to have a perverse incentive structure in the long run where it's not actually going to be about humanitarian aid and altruism. It's going to be more about, hey, what can we get out of it? So when you have one nation above other nations, that's a shitty incentive, as history has proven, because every empire ever eventually takes advantage of it if they're viewed as, we're the ones who go everywhere and control everything. So that's why you need to go together, the international community, through the UN. Have the UN intervene whenever there's a genocide. But outside of that, when should the U.S. military act alone to protect ourselves? And that's it. Bernie Sanders agrees with me, and most Americans, or a plurality of Americans, trust him more with the military than anybody else, precisely for that reason. Because other people, I don't know, doesn't affect me, doesn't affect my family, I'm rich, I'm part of the establishment here. I don't know, so I'll send your shitty kid to go fight and die in Raqqa. You know, I'll go send them, why not get them involved in Crimea? All of a sudden, a place that fucking 90% of Americans never heard of before, as soon as it looked like Russia was doing something aggressive in the region, we gotta send troops to Crimea! We gotta send troops to Crimea! Right. Go try to explain that to a fucking mother in Kentucky who's poor, who loves her son, that's all she has in the world, and now the son's gotta go fight in Crimea and possibly die because of some stupid geopolitical chessboard that you made up and you wanna stick to because you care about power and you care about money and you care about business influences and you're part of the establishment and you want domination. So spare me. It's perfectly clear why Bernie Sanders did well in this. And it's now just time for people to take that to the fucking ballot box. Because if you get any of the other people's mindset, could you imagine any other nation in the world acted like we do around the world? Think about it. If that happened today, if all of a sudden fucking Australia decided, fuck you, America, we're going to go take care of everything, and if you get in our way, we're going to fuck you up. Imagine they started acting like that. Imagine Australia, they wage an illegal war, kill minimum 200,000 civilians, they open an extrajudicial prison, they do torture as in a systemic way, where like, no, this is what we do. You know, you have the list of what they do, anal rape, hypothermia torture, horrific, horrific stuff. If they acted like that, or if a regime we dislike acts like that, somebody who is an official enemy to the U.S., what would we say? Oh my God, terrorists! They're really ripe for regime change. But if we wage the illegal wars and we set up the extrajudicial prisons and we do the torture, us? Ripe for regime change? Please, you can't even have the conversation about holding us to the same standard we hold other people to. Well, Bernie Sanders wants to do that. You want to know why? Because he's reasonable. Okay. Let's move on here. I'm blowing off the first break because of that fucking annoying issue I had. We're going to go to Bill de Blasio. Hopefully this will work. I told you guys I needed to find a way to dig up the clips and blah, blah, blah. And we'll see if this works. All right. Bill de Blasio is the mayor of New York City. Now, he's endorsed Hillary Clinton, which I must admit is a little surprising because Bill de Blasio really, really, really ran a progressive campaign, and he even pushed for some pretty progressive legislation while in office so far. So the fact that he would pick Clinton over Bernie is really weird, and there might be something going on behind the scenes there. I don't know what it is, and I'm just speculating, but Hillary's known to cut backroom deals. Doesn't mean a position in her administration. Possibly. I don't know. Again, I'm just speculating here, but he made the endorsement, and he went on Chris Hayes' show, where Chris asked him why it is that Bernie Sanders gets the youth vote overwhelmingly. Now, you would expect him to give a standard politician answer, especially since he's endorsed Hillary Clinton, but he doesn't. He actually gives a really good answer here, so let's watch.
Conversations with your kids about this primary. And it has been striking to me, literally the biggest demographic divide of any demographic divide, Democrat or Republican, race, anything, is the generational divide. Under 30, Sanders is winning 71-29. 6 years over, Clinton, it's the inverse. What do you make of that?
I think young people have experienced life during and after the Great Recession. And, you know, having been born to parents who were the Great Depression generation,
yeah.
I can see an interesting resonance when I talk to my kids, Chiara and Dante. They are exceedingly concerned about money. They're scared to death of college debt. They do not think opportunity is easy to come by. There's a sobriety and a sharpness to a lot of members of this generation because they were born into overt economic unfairness. Well, a different reality in the Great Depression, but the result is the same, a really sharp progressive impulse and a dissatisfaction with the status quo that is visceral. I do think, to your previous point, the Democratic Party is moving to the left. I think the country is moving to the left. I think the next generation is already there. And I am very happy about those realities. The Democratic Party of the DLC days, the Democratic Leadership Council days, unfortunately was part of the problem. And that impulse had to be weeded out of the party, and it's happening now, and a lot of that is coming from the next generation.
That is a better answer than they're naive idealists, which is the answer I hear a lot, right? About, I mean, people say, well, sure, generationally, you know, you think these things, and then you get knocked around by life.
I think they're very sober and realistic.
Yeah, that's correct.
Really,
in some ways the opposite, right?
Yeah, no, I actually think it's based on lived experience.
Yeah.
And by the way, do you know a lot of people would say, you know, do you know a lot of folks in their 40s, 50s, 60s would say, oh, the next generation is going to have better than me? That was a key concept of the American dream. I know for a fact that the numbers say the next generation will have it worse than we had it, and will face much deeper challenges and much more economic unfairness and much more stratification of wealth. Well, they're reacting very logically, and they're saying this doesn't work. We're not going to continue this.
Yeah, that's spot on. Now, I can tell you guys because I'm 28, so I'm like right in the age group where, you know, it's overwhelmingly in favor of Bernie Sanders, and we had, like he says, the experience of the Great Recession and what it was like before versus after and stuff like that. And I remember from when I was a kid in the 1990s, you would learn about in school the previous wars that we had and the struggles and all this stuff, and, you know, being naive, a naive little kid, I thought, well, oh, okay, I guess we're pretty much over with that, like, savage barbaric time in humanity where there's wars and, you know, there's overt racism and people hate each other and all this stuff. And in the 90s, it felt, partly because I'm a kid and I'm in my bubble, but partly because the 90s actually were a little bit better time than what happened later, we thought, like, oh, so now we just have peace and prosperity, and war is like a thing of the past, and it is what it is. So in the Clinton years, growing up in the Clinton years, again, I was born in 88, so you do the math there and you see how old I was during the Clinton years, you think, like, oh, okay, we pretty much got this stuff figured out. Now, obviously, later on, when you learn and you grow up, you look back and you go, well, actually, Clinton did some fucked up stuff. He deregulated Wall Street. He did NAFTA. So it's not all roses and it's not all puppies and rainbows. We know that now looking back and all that stuff. But at the time, you felt like, yeah, everything's kind of okay. Fast forward to 9/11, post-9/11, the Bush administration, and obviously the end of Bush's administration. And I remember going through that time like, what the fuck is happening here? So there was the terror attack, and then Bush's response to the terror attack, and then he wages two wars. One of them had nothing to do with 9/11 at all. It was an epic disaster. You can't, it's hard for somebody, especially my age group, growing up and having both experiences, to look at that and not come to the conclusion that particularly in Iraq, we were the bad guys. And that's just based off the facts. That's just looking at what we did, looking at the numbers of dead people, looking at the fact that Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11, looking at the fact that we went on the offense. You know, there's a million and one reasons why I look at that and go, oh my God, we were the bad guy there, and look at the devastation that we did. So you have this Democratic administration beforehand, which seemed to be relatively smooth and good. Then you had Bush, which was an absolute disaster, and then remember the economic crash when he's leaving office, the Great Recession and the subprime mortgage crisis, where we're bleeding 800,000 jobs a month. Over his 8 years in office, he net lost 646,000 jobs, which is insanely bad. That Jimmy Carter's maligned as a bad economic president. He created over a million jobs. Bush lost 646,000 in 8 years in office when Jimmy Carter only had 4 years. So we saw a Democratic administration that was relatively decent, and then a Republican one that fucking tanked the country, waged a war on the wrong country, got us trillions of dollars in debt, and crashed the economy. How the fuck can a millennial vote for a Republican? And then add on top of that, I haven't even gotten into social issues. Where they're on TV, I remember when I'm young, and they're on TV, and they're arguing that gay marriage is wrong, and I'm like, even as a little kid, who cares? Who cares? Let them do what they want. It's got nothing to do with you, you prick. So all of these reasons why millennials would look and go, fuck the Republicans, we like the Democrats. And Bill de Blasio's right when he says, we experienced pre- and post-recession, and exactly caused it, and it was the deregulation, it was letting Wall Street run wild, and it was just a system that's basically the opposite of FDR's system, where he does the New Deal and he cares about the people. And then along comes somebody like Bernie Sanders, who crystallizes that vision that we all had on some level, where we think, oh, wait a second, we're not anti-capitalism. You know, hey, at least I'm not. I have eyes. I see how the Soviet Union looks versus the United States. I see that to a certain extent, if you have capitalism in some areas, it does lead to increased prosperity. So, but we look at it and we say, well, let's be reasonable here. Let's balance it out. What should be a government function? Because there are plenty of things that just don't make sense to be in the private sector. There's a perverse incentive for the profit motive in some areas. Well, Bernie comes along and says, I got the answer right here. Healthcare, education. You know, we want paid vacation by law. We want all these things that other modern countries have. And then also being the generation that grew up on the internet, we kind of grew right alongside the internet, we know how to use it. And we research and we learn and we get educated. And then with the blossoming of new media, you learn even more. And then you realize when you look around the world, hey, wait a second, virtually all the other modern nations, in fact, all of them do, have universal health care. Most of the other modern nations have universal education. They have paid vacation by law. This is why don't we have that? Like, and we don't think that's unreasonable because it's not unreasonable. What's unreasonable is what we have right now, where we don't have, you know, the the free college, free education, and stuff like that. So we're like, hey, can you just treat us like every other modern nation treats their citizens? It ain't that much to ask. And then when you look at our bloated military budget, you look at our corporate welfare programs, you look at the subsidies that go to ExxonMobil, you look at pork barrel spending, you're wasting all this money on stupid shit. Spend it on us. We pay our taxes. We just want back things that make sense like all the other modern nations have. So, yeah, when the younger generation looks at Bernie Sanders, they go, he makes sense. He makes sense. He's not a radical. You're the radical. If you disagree with him, you're the radical. And then Hillary's the other option on the left who runs on incrementalism? Yeah, sometimes, actually, I'm lying, because half the time she's like, I'm more progressive than Bernie, and then the other half the time she's like, no, we need to do incremental change, and let's not go crazy here and go full universal health care. I mean, what are you, nuts, making us catch up to the rest of the world? And we see the influences behind the scenes. We see how much money she takes from Wall Street and from other donors. It's not, like, the thing is, it's not an option. Like, people, they go, oh, yeah, Bernie, choosing Bernie over Hillary. No, we have principles. We have ideas. We know, based on evidence, what works around the world, and we go, oh, that guy represents that. It's not a choice. It's just, oh, that guy is better, objectively, empirically, with what he wants to implement. So that's why we fucking support Bernie Sanders, because nobody else even has a vision. What fucking vision do we have, especially on the Republican side? What vision? What vision? You tell me. What vision do they fucking have? What vision? What is Donald Trump really going to do in office? Nobody knows. You want to know why? He contradicts himself all the fucking time. He's a xenophobic, racist, bigoted prick who's, kick out 11 million, 12 million undocumented immigrants, even though most are good people that just work hard. Ban all Muslims from the country. You know, do violence at my rallies against minorities? I'm not saying you should do it, but maybe you should do it. And on economics, I'm right wing now. Now I'm left wing, and forget trade deals. They suck. Nobody knows what he would do. There is no vision. He's an authoritarian through and through. And Ted Cruz, what's his vision? Making America the Christian Saudi Arabia. That's what it is, and selling out to his donors. Hillary Clinton, like I said, incrementalism, maybe. I'll give you a little bit, but maybe not, because I got these other donors that I have to please because they've given me so much money that I'm beholden to them. It's not a choice. It's like a bus full of fucking clowns with one sane person. That's why we support Bernie, because Bernie's right and they're wrong. Whew. Let me go to the propagandists around the world who are having a field day with Donald Trump. Propagandists around the world are really having a field day with Donald Trump running for president, and they're using him to make some particularly ridiculous points. So the Guardian reports that the Chinese Communist paper, the state paper, the Global Times, says the following about the rise of Trump. Quote, "The rise of a racist in the U.S. political area worries the whole world. He has even been called another Benito Mussolini or Adolf Hitler by some Western media. Mussolini and Hitler came to power through elections, a heavy lesson for Western democracy." The problem wasn't the election. The problem was what they did after being elected. Once they were in office, they said, nice, no more elections. Man, in the words of Eric Cartman, man. So Hitler won 43% of the vote, which is scary. But again, at the time, nobody knew that he was going to do what he's going to do. He did vague attacks on Jews and minorities, but people were like, hey, you're not going to actually do it. And then they voted for him, and then he fucking did it, which is a lesson for some people who are running today and how we should treat them. But they won the election. The problem wasn't the election. The problem was that after they got in office, they said, oh, now we are fascist dictators and there's no more elections. Sorry. So that's the problem. So what a fucking hacky political point. But I actually hate everybody in this story. So obviously I hate Donald Trump because it does make it super easy for the rest of the world to be like, look at these fucking clowns. He's the embodiment of every negative stereotype of America. Have you stopped and thought about that? Like every negative stereotype. He's arrogant, as arrogant as can possibly be. He's a little bit overweight, which again is a stereotype of Americans. He thinks he's significantly smarter than he is, and he's like a capitalist materialist buffoon. So every single negative stereotype, and then he goes out there, he says these racist things, these xenophobic things, these bigoted things, and yeah, it's fucking embarrassing. It's also embarrassing that he contradicts himself every 3 seconds on whatever policy. He can't help himself. He's a serial liar. True that the rest of the world can look at us and go, what are you doing, this fucking guy, that guy? So I hate that aspect, but I also hate this fucking bullshit paper, this propaganda outlet, because look at what they're doing here. Look at what they're doing. They're going, oh, yeah, Western democracy is the problem. Much better to live in a police state and a dictatorship like our faux communist regime, where it's just total tyranny and we control every aspect of your life. So ignore our evils and focus on the evils of Donald Trump. Focus on the evils of Western democracy. This is the oldest trick in the book. And understand, this is why everybody should police their own nation and their own wrongs. Because that shows, that's intellectually correct. That's probably not the right phrasing, but you guys get what I'm saying. That is an actual principled thing to do. Because when you're willing to critique your own, that shows, oh, I actually have these principles, and I'm willing to apply them across the board. I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say, when we do it, it's okay. When you do it, it's not okay. So that's why people, oftentimes the left, gets maligned, because they care about trying to correct our own faults. And be, oh, blame America first, man. No, we just want to be consistent. So if we say other countries shouldn't do X, Y, or Z, we shouldn't do them either. Not that hard. But this is the crime that they're committing here. U.S. does it all the time, too. But they're doing it in a particularly ridiculous way. Because, all the time, they are such a police state government, and they crack down on dissent. And then look at them here. Like, oh, yeah, America's crazy. See, the rise of Donald Trump. They're the problem. They're the problem. Well, why don't you get your own fucking house cleaned up first before you comment on us, asshole? But they have no interest in that because it's the state-controlled paper. So we've done nothing wrong ever, and our system is so stable and so great. Them. Oh, Western democracy. Look at this. Look at how bad they are. Much better to be in a police state communist regime. State communist slash pseudo capitalism slash just fucking run your life, and you're a spoke in the machine of nonsense here. That didn't come out very cleanly, did it? But anyway, yeah, this is horrible. Donald Trump's making us look bad, and propagandists are really able to put it in hyperdrive here and kind of solidified the perception that we're maniacs around the world. Not that the Iraq war didn't do that enough, but you get my point. Okay, let me continue. Let's go to Alabama Republicans and what they're up to. Alabama man! Remember that from South Park? If you don't, then that just sounded super weird. Raw Story is reporting on some Alabama Republicans who are pushing legislation to try and punish poor people. Stay classy. So here's what they say. The bill, created by Republican Senator Arthur Orr, cuts the time frame for poverty assistance from 5 years to 3 years. It also creates a new layer of bureaucracy for poor people seeking help, including the requirement that they sign a contract vowing to adhere to the program's rules. It also disqualifies people from getting food stamps or financial assistance if the recipients own cars. The bill will go to the state Senate after a clearing committee 10-3. It limits food stamps and welfare. The vast majority of welfare recipients, 77%, are children. Wow. Now, this goes to show you that on the far right, they genuinely view poverty as some sort of individual moral failing. They don't view it as part of a broader economic system. They don't view it as something that oftentimes is a byproduct of capitalism. where some people are going to be left behind, some people are going to be poor, and they don't think that as a result of that, hey, we should set up some sort of system that tries to fix those ills. They view it as, if you got left behind, if the macroeconomic factor screwed you, well, it's a moral failing on your part. Like, it shows some sort of defect in character. Well, do yourself a favor. Go talk to somebody, anybody, who got laid off during the Great Recession and ask them if it was a moral failing on their part. You had the economy crashed largely because of bad decisions made on Wall Street and terrible loans that were given out to make profit in the short term. And people, they were fired because their bosses decided to fire them. Oftentimes, it had nothing to do with their performance. They could have been fine, but companies had to downsize. And virtually all the time, when you go and look at the data, you have more people than job openings. So that the math doesn't work. There, people are just fucked and left behind by the system, regardless of how much they want to work, how much they want that promotion, how much they want good employment, and all that stuff. So, I mean, that fundamentally destroys the logic of, hey, if you don't have a job, hey, if you're in poverty, you're lazy, you're a moocher, you're a parasite, it's on you, it's your fault. No, oftentimes that's not true. You're always going to need people, for example, to do minimum wage jobs. So when Republicans talk about the minimum wage, like, oh, well, if you want to make more money, just get the promotion or just go get a better job. Well, jackass, let's use your logic and extrapolate here. Let's say everybody woke up tomorrow who's a minimum wage worker and they say, I'm going to make more money. I'm going to get that promotion. I'm going to get a new job and make more money. Well, again, you're always going to need people to do those minimum wage jobs. So not everybody is going to get the job even if they want it that pays more. Not everybody's going to get the promotion even if they want it that pays more, no matter how hard they work. You'd be the hardest worker in the world, but if luck doesn't fall right and there's no nepotism or favoritism, you ain't going to go up that ladder. But they view it as, I don't care, it's on you. If you make less than a living wage, it's not the fault of the system for not providing a living wage. It's your fucking fault. Look in the mirror. Even though you work full-time, even though you bust your ass, you deserve to live in poverty. How callous is that? And this is from the same group of people, to bring up Jesus as much as possible. I love Christianity. I love Jesus. Oh, he's our Lord and Savior. And by the way, we should do the opposite of what he wants in every realm in politics. These are usually the same people who were for the Iraq War. They're for the torture program. They're like, help the poor. Fuck off. I mean, look at this, man. And also, there's one other part that I really thought was fascinating. Oh, they say you need to sign a contract and promise to adhere to the rules of the program. And if you don't, well, then we take everything away. Can you imagine they ever did that with Wall Street? Okay, look. We're going to give you a bailout here, but here's the deal. You can't make these same risky loans that you made before. You can't do X, Y, or Z. And you need to make sure that you do everything right. And there are some red lines here. You can't cross them. They would never do that. In fact, they didn't do that. What they said is, hey, here's a bailout. No strings attached. Rules that you have to follow with taxpayer money that we just gave you? No. Do whatever the fuck you want. What the fuck, man? So if it's government money going to the rich, going to the people who bought the government, oh, go nuts. We don't care. But if it's going towards people who were screwed over and left behind because of the system, oh, we're going to be punitive against you. Oh, you fell on hard times and you lost your job through no fault of your own and you need just a couple bucks to feed your fucking kids? Yeah, I see through your scam here. Well, I'm going to crack down on you. You got to sign this contract. And, oh, yeah, get a job, but you're not allowed to have a car. What the fuck? If you have a car and you're on food stamps or welfare, they're like, no more food stamps or welfare. Well, then how the fuck are they supposed to get a job if you're saying no car to have food stamps? In order to keep the food stamps, you can't have a car. In order to keep the welfare, you can't have a car. Well, you're perpetuating the cycle here. They need the car to find a job in order to get off the food stamps and the welfare. It's unbelievable. Guys, they view it as a moral failing. They view poverty not as part of larger economic problems. They view it as, you're just a bad person, which is super ironic because based on their policies and what they want to do, it's a fair thing to take away that indeed they are bad people because they're callous as fuck and they're unable to put themselves in anybody else's shoes. You bet your fucking ass that if one of them fell on hard times, one of them was in poverty, they lost their job, they're down on their luck, oh, they would think they are entitled to the welfare and food stamps and the social safety net. It's me who fell on hard times. Obviously, I'm a good person. I care. It's just those other poor people and minorities. They're the icky ones who don't care, and they're lazy, and they just want to collect their checks. But me, I'm a good person. So if I fall on hard times, gimme, gimme, gimme. If they fall on hard times, bah, take away their car. Make them sign something that says that they'll follow everything. And if they don't, take it away. Please. They're cretinous is what they are. Okay. Let me take a break here, the first and last break of the show. When we come back, The Nation has a fantastic article by Michelle Chen detailing just how important undocumented immigrants are to the economy. And we have more Alabama. I mean, Alabama's getting fucking hammered today. And we have a disastrous story coming out of Milwaukee about the lack of having good federal gun regulations. So we got all that and much more. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Memories that only we
right, we're back, guys. We're back. Yet again, I'm hearing that the sound quality on Blog Talk Radio is Dickie McGee's ex. Wish I could do something about that, but again, it's not me, it's them. Oftentimes, whenever we have problems with this kind of stuff, that's always them, it's never me. So, I don't know, man. I've been recommending to people when they reach out to me on this via Twitter, and I've gotten plenty because of the sound quality in the past few days. I just recommend that you listen to the YouTube playlists when they come out. I know that's annoying. I know it's later on in the day, but, I mean, you get pristine audio at that time. So BTR just sucks in general. I mean, everything from the quality of the audio to oftentimes the glitches that happen, which we've had a few of those that we've spoken about. Sometimes they disconnect me mid-sentence. So a lot of stuff going on. I know it sucks. That one, I promise you, is not on my end. So we'll see. Maybe it'll get better. You know, you let me know if it improved in any way. Okay, let's go to The Nation and a fantastic article by Michelle Chen here. The Nation has a fantastic article by Michelle Chen detailing how important undocumented immigrants are to America. And she went ahead and busted up some very common myths about them. So listen to these numbers. This is fascinating. She says, altogether, according to state and local tax data analysis published by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, undocumented immigrants contribute about $11.6 billion to the economy annually, including nearly $7 billion in sales and excise taxes and $3.6 billion in property taxes. They are, in economic terms, productive citizens and pay a higher effective tax rate than the top 1% income bracket. Wow. Think about that fact. Undocumented immigrants, who by and large don't make that much per year, they pay a higher effective tax rate than the top 1%, who theoretically, in a progressive system like we have, a progressive tax system, are supposed to pay the most. Nope. They usually have a team of lawyers and loopholes and things they exploit, where at the end of the day, whoop, look at that, I only paid 14%, where the undocumented immigrants are apparently paying a lot of taxes. Now, on top of that, there's this myth that's been going around forever. Go read fucking Ann Coulter's Twitter feed or anybody who's anti-immigrant. And they talk about how, they're looting the treasury, basically. All these resources are going to them, and that's the problem, and why should we take care of them when we got our own problems, and blah, 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 blah. But wait a second. They can't get, for example, the earned income tax credit, which is, basically one of the tax cuts or tax credits that is targeted at the middle class and targeted at the poor. They can't. They are not allowed to use that. Okay, what else? Well, they can't get Social Security or Medicare or welfare or food stamps. So this idea like, oh, yeah, they're exploiting welfare is what they're doing. They can't even get it, dipshit. Did you bother to do any research before you talk about this? But they don't. They don't. They just talk out of their asses. Yeah, taking the welfare and food stamps. Yeah, robbing us. That's the problem. But they're not. They can't get those things. And again, they net contribute $11.6 billion to the economy. And furthermore, it's not just theoretical. They're doing the jobs you don't want to fucking do. Now, again, you can say, well, you know, that's not right. You're generalizing when you say that. No, Alabama, there are some places in Alabama that tried the furthest right-wing immigration policy you can. They flat out deported everybody who was undocumented. Within weeks, they were like, we need them back. Like, what do you mean you need them back? Well, nobody is filling the jobs that they were doing, and when they do fill the jobs, they don't do it nearly as well. So, yeah, we got to bring them back in. Guys, the solution is you do amnesty, and then you make it so that everybody has to be paid a living wage. Like, right now, it is true that you can have undocumented immigrants come in and undercut wages because they work for less than minimum wage. But the solution to that is the opposite of what the right thinks it is. The solution to that is, do amnesty, make them citizens, and then you have to pay everybody a living wage. That's the solution. And I get it. Like, So would I deport anybody? Sure. You know who I'd deport? The same people President Obama wants to deport. The same people Hillary Clinton wants to deport. The same people the Democrats say they'll deport. Criminals! Okay, yeah, kick out the criminals. But if it's an undocumented immigrant and they're here and they're productive and they set up a family here, why would I kick them out? They're working. They're paying taxes. They're trying to create a better life. They've been here for a while already. Why would I kick them? It doesn't make any sense. There's only one reason why you would want to kick them out. Because in the minds of people like Donald Trump, in the minds of the far right, in their mind, immigrant equals dark-skinned person, brown-skinned person. I don't want them around me. Icky. Go away. Go away. Kick them out. Build a wall. So, okay, that's your position. Well, you're on the record now. You would like to get rid of people that net contribute $11.6 billion to the economy, nearly $7 billion in sales and excise taxes, and $3.6 billion in property taxes, and do not take welfare and food stamps and the government programs. You would like to kick out some of the most productive people in the country. Thank you very much. All right, now, we go back to Alabama. We're going to tell you what's happening over there. So they're waging a war on the poor, as we just described, and now it's a war on reason. The Alabama State Board of Education decided to make an ass of themselves and dumb down kids of the state. So Raw Story reports here, Alabama science textbooks will continue telling children that the theory of evolution is controversial, even though this claim is not true. The State Board of Education voted to keep this one-page disclaimer in biology textbooks, a move advocated by conservative Christians. The insert reads, in part, "The theory of evolution by natural selection is a controversial theory that is included in this textbook. It is assumed that it produces large changes, even though this has not been directly observed." Okay. That's false. We have overwhelming evidence that this indeed does happen. In fact, there's been articles of, oh no, we like literally just witnessed evolution happen in front of us. So when they say that, it's just not correct. And to the idea that it's controversial, it's only controversial among the uneducated on the topic. So when you go to the experts, they're like, oh no, this is not controversial at all. This is obvious. This is a gimme. We know this one. This is for sure. But think about how that's such a dirty trick. Well, with this person, it's controversial to do this kind of medical procedure. But then you go to the doctors, and they're like, this is not controversial. It's like, well, we just talked to this guy who's a plumber, and he said it's controversial. Well, that's nice. This isn't his fucking field. He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. The doctors know what they're talking about. They say this procedure is not controversial. So what the fuck are you talking about? That's what's happening here. We have some conservative Christians who believe the world is 6,000 years old who say that evolution is controversial. Well, the only thing that's controversial here is them. They're controversial because they're so silly and obviously incorrect. So there you have it, man. Dude, it's 2016. The year is 2016. And these idiots in Alabama are like, you have to add that it's a controversial theory. They are intent upon living in a primitive age. This is. And by the way, this handicaps the next generation beyond belief. You have no idea. You know, this is like, basically you want them to live in a pseudo-madrasa in this case. I mean, if all you're going to teach them or you're going to bog them down with religious nonsense, then you can't, how can you expect them to go on and be successful in the modern world and in a competitive economy when they don't even have the basics? Like, if you don't know that evolution is correct, how the fuck are you going to be involved in anything that requires any nuance and detail? How are you going to be involved in computer engineering or artificial intelligence or any of this stuff? You're handicapping these kids up front. And also, it's hilarious when you read this and then you take into consideration what the Republicans say about Common Core. Oh, no, we can't have any federal standards. Don't be crazy. You got to return education to the localities in the states. Yeah, when you do that, this happens. When you say, okay, everybody in Mississippi, Alabama, go ahead, put whatever you want in the curriculum. They're like, all right. Jesus served as Secretary of the Treasury to Ronald Reagan. That's history, and we're going to put that in the classes. But that's not accurate. That's not accurate. So Common Core, and by the way, you can be against certain aspects of Common Core, of course, and you can be against, hey, the thing they taught here is weird and not right. That all makes sense. But to say scrap the whole idea of some federal standards to give it back to the states, well, no, this is what happens. States' rights has always been a dodge of an argument to get away with doing something stupid. Like when you had Southern sheriffs arguing in favor of segregation, they didn't come out and say, we're racist and we would like to keep blacks down. They came out and said, states' rights. Federal government got to butt out and let the states do what they want to do. And then doing what they want was, we're going to keep blacks as second-class citizens. And this is another argument. States' rights. Got to let me teach my kids that the world is 6,000 years old and that an old man was on an ark with a bunch of animals. But no, we don't have to do that. Facts are the same in California as they are in Wyoming. Sorry. Okay. Let's go to Milwaukee here to talk about a horrific gun story. We have a disastrous story coming out of Milwaukee, which highlights the danger of not having rational federal gun laws. So Raw Story reports here, a Milwaukee man accused of gunning down three of his neighbors because they spoke a foreign language had his guns taken away over mental health concerns, but the weapons were later returned. Dan Pop is accused of methodically shooting to death three other residents of a four-unit apartment complex after complaining that a father and son from Puerto Rico did not speak English. His mother said her son had begun to follow her constantly because he believed she was plotting with a gay friend to kill him. He told police that he was afraid to stay at his mother's home because he sensed, and I quote, demons in the other residents and suspected they were conducting witchcraft rituals. Okay, let's understand exactly what happened here. The dude has a bunch of guns. He had this fucking psychotic breakdown, and they took his guns away from him. So, like, whoa, what's going on here? Witchcraft, demons in the residence. He also went on to say, he used to be in the Navy, I think, and he went on to say, oh, no, they're doing mind control. They've been having mind control on me the entire time. They're in my head right now. So, and Alex Jones is going to have an orgy and do a segment about how this is true, I know. And so the guy lost his marbles, and they take his guns. Fast forward a little bit, they're like, okay, we're just going to give him back now. Wait, what? There's no process set up. There's no way you can take him and keep him because the guy genuinely needs help. Like, he needs mental health help. Like, okay, we're going to give him back now. What happens? He ends up shooting and killing four people. Was it three people or four people? Hold on. Oh, I'm sorry. It was three. He ends up shooting and killing three people. Understand, guys, this isn't even a partisan issue. Like, this one's easy. This one's, okay, just, you know, nothing. This is, everybody can agree to this. And the polls show they do, over 90% of the American people. This is like, let's set up a universal background check system, or let's set up a mental health system where when you have a situation like this where somebody's heavily armed and they're literally seeing and hearing things and they're potentially schizophrenic and they lost it, that there should be a system where it's not just, hey, temporary hold the guns. You have a process set up where, and it's, due process, so don't get me wrong, it's not just you take them and that's it. You have to prove that, okay, well, this person really does have issues. And then with this guy, it would have been easy to prove it, and then he wouldn't be allowed to get a gun. Now, look, it's clear that, well, maybe he's able to get it on the black market. Sure, that happens every once in a while, no doubt. But you did make it harder for him to get a gun, which means that the statistics would drop in terms of gun deaths because you were able to keep guns out of some crazy people's hands. This isn't that hard to figure out, guys. I mean, that's often the counter-argument is like, well, if you do a universal background check, well, That don't mean you're going to stop all the mass killings. That's right. But we're going to limit them. Because you can discourage, even if you discourage 40%, 50% of the people, and it will be more than that, as statistics from other countries have shown us. But even if you discourage 40% or 50% of people from getting the gun, then the mass shooting does not happen. Again, this is sane, normal stuff. And honestly, most Republicans would agree to this too. Why would you want a guy like this taking away your right to have a gun if you're a law-abiding, sane citizen who never did anything wrong to anybody? And I agree with you. You should be allowed to have a gun. I want you to be able to have a gun if you're that kind of person. Do I want this guy to be able to have it? No. And this guy's making it much easier for people to come along and say, take it from everybody. Now, I don't agree with that. When you have something like this happening and you're doing nothing about it, well, that's obviously going to bubble up and fester and make other people go, oh, we got to stop this. We got to stop this. Take them all. So let's not do that. Let's take away the guns from the right people after due process, only when they're former felons and literally schizophrenic and, you know, they have a laundry list of these issues, then we take it. If you're against that, you know, people would try to spin this as me being unreasonable and me being extremist. No, if you're against this, let's be clear, you're the extremist. Okay, more to the LA Times here and see what they have cooking for us. The LA Times is reporting on a troubling crackdown on free speech on college campuses. They report, University of California officials are proposing to include anti-Zionism as a form of discrimination that is unacceptable on campus, according to a long-awaited draft statement on intolerance released Tuesday. One letter signed by more than 130 UC faculty members supported naming anti-Zionism as an expression of anti-Semitism. No, 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 no. This is dead wrong. And you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when people go too far on Islamophobia and they say it's anti-Muslim bigotry to say you disagree with the doctrine of Islam and to point out verses that you think are troubling. Well, no, that would be me disagreeing with the doctrine of Islam and pointing out verses I think are troubling. That's an intellectual exercise. That's perfectly fine. Anti-Muslim bigotry is not okay. When you say all Muslims are literalists, they're fundamentalists or jihadists or, you know, they're too extreme to be considered normal, if you generalize about all Muslims and you're intolerant and xenophobic and bigoted against them, that is bigotry. It's not bigotry to say, I disagree with the doctrine of Islam, any more than it's bigoted to say, I disagree with the doctrine of Christianity. So that's not bigotry. There's a distinction there. Well, there's a distinction here, too. To be an anti-Semite, to have an irrational hatred of all Jews, that's bigotry. To say, I disagree with Zionism, having an official Jewish state, that's rational. I don't agree with Islamic states. Any Islamic country, whether it's ISIS who says they're an Islamic country or whether it's, you know, Iran or Saudi Arabia, I don't agree. They shouldn't. That's not okay. Secularism is a human right. So that's not okay. Nor is it okay to have a Jewish state. Yeah, we have a Jewish state here, so but you're not allowed to criticize. If you do, you're a bigot. No, if I criticize that, I'm making sense. I'm saying secularism is a human right. You can't have an official Muslim state or Christian state or Jewish state, because that is theocracy by definition. Now, you can do mental gymnastics, and you can do, you know, word salad and try to throw it back at me and say, well, but within said Jewish state, there's different people of different backgrounds, so therefore not really a Jewish state. But that's no more convincing to me than hearing that there are some Baha'i that live in Iran. And it still shouldn't be an Islamic state if there are people there that are not Islamic. And even if there aren't, it shouldn't be an Islamic state. There should be no Islamic state. There should be no Jewish state, no Islamic state, no Christian state, period. And furthermore, let's be honest about Zionism here. What do people mean when they talk about that? Well, when you, people who are Zionists and who are admittedly Zionists, by and large, they're like, yeah, not only do we want a Jewish state, we want all the land. So Palestinians, well, there are no Palestinians, first of all. I love that argument. There are no Palestinians. But we're going to say the Palestinians, even though there are no Palestinians, need to get the fuck off their own land. The settlers should take over more, and the entire region. There shouldn't be a two-state deal. It should all be a Jewish state, and I am a Zionist. I want all the land. That's equally as kooky and dumb as when Hamas says, we want all the land. All of it will be Palestine. We want to drive Israel into the sea. No more Israel. Well, no, that's extremism. Why would it not be extremism if it's the flip side? Yeah, we want a Jewish state, and we want all the land. Well, how about both of you the fuck off? How about that? How about we do a two-state deal? How about the Zionists and settlers are crazy people? How about the people in Hamas who want all the land? They're fucking crazy people. How about we have reasonable people come together and say, all right, we got to work this out. Let's have a two-state deal, 1967 borders, build a giant wall, split Jerusalem, iron out all the details to water rights and stuff like that, and then that's it. Have recognition in the international community for both sides, and we're good. That's where reasonable people are. But now they're trying to say on college campuses, if you're anti-Zionist, you're a bigot. That's as big of a crackdown on free speech as any crackdown on free speech. This is just as bad as the PC brigade that comes along and they say, you can't say that America is a meritocracy because that's a microaggression. And wait. Now, I agree America is not a meritocracy, and I can prove it to you with facts, but if somebody says it, you don't say, that's a microaggression, I will now censor you. That's stupid. You're being a child if that's your response. Microaggressions in general, you're a child if you say, you microaggressed me. Why not have a discussion and say, hey, here's why I think you're wrong. You can tell me why you think I'm wrong, but let's talk it out. No, I will censor by saying it's a microaggression. And this is the PC police. These people say, oh, no, you're not allowed to say that because I don't like that. Therefore, I'm offended. Therefore, you need to shut the fuck up. No, that's not the way freedom of speech works. That's not the way free expression works. Same thing here. I'm against Zionism. How dare you? That's bigotry. No, wouldn't it be bigotry of the Zionists? Because the Zionists say, we want a Jewish state. So to the exclusion of everybody else, Jewish state. And oh yeah, usually we want all the land too. So that would be me being intolerant of intolerance, which is fine. They're the ones who are actually intolerant. This is just like with Islamists. Like, oh my God, you're against me being able to oppress women. You're intolerant. No, I'm intolerant of your intolerance. You're the intolerant one, and I'm calling out your intolerance. Somehow now being anti-Zionist is, oh my goodness, you went so far. This is anti-Semitism. You must hate all Jews because you're against Zionism, because you're against the right wing of the state of Israel. You hate all Jews. No, what that means is I'm against the right wing of the state of Israel. That's what it means. Just like I'm against the right wing in the U.S., just like I'm against the right wing in Iran, just like I'm against the right wing everywhere. But somehow now in this one place, oh, it's bigotry. It's bigotry if you're against the right wing in Israel. No, that's absolute bullshit. And everybody who likes to fancy themselves a protector of free speech, as I fancy myself, and I have a track record and I'm consistent on this, you need to come out and say, I may not even agree with it. I may be a Zionist, but of course people should be able to criticize it without being censored and without it being included as a form of discrimination. Oh, please. Unbelievable. That's like saying, hey, we should, when the U.S. does a war, you're not allowed to speak out against it because that's discrimination. What? That doesn't make any sense. What are you talking about? The Guardian is reporting on a positive coming out of Qatar here, which is rare, but it is a positive story. So they say, a Qatari poet has been pardoned and released, wait for the turn, after serving more than 3 years of a 15-year prison sentence for reciting a poem perceived to be critical of the emir, his brother said on Wednesday. So he was originally sentenced to life. Then it was reduced to 15 years, and now he was released after spending about 4 years in prison. The guy's name is Rashid Al-Ajami. And my favorite part of the article is his brother's quote, because his brother goes on to say, "Tolerance and forgiveness is an authentic trait of the people and rulers of Qatar." Okay, number one, no. According to human rights organizations, they literally have modern-day slavery. Not really all that tolerant last time I checked. And number two, okay, this dude has been convinced that spending 4 years in prison for a poem is liberal. Like, oh, no, it's cool. He's supposed to spend life, and they let him off early. That's liberal. Well, it's certainly more liberal than spending life in prison for a poem, but you know what is actually tolerant and liberal when it comes to poetry? Not spending any time in prison. So, to me, this shows super low expectations. It's like, well, I mean, come on. They're crazy. They do modern-day slavery, and they lock people up when they disagree with them. But hey, at least they let him out early. No, I'm not going to only give credit for that. You give credit for saying it's better than if it's life in prison. But no, what you say is don't lock him up for anything that you just disagree with. That's not a crime. But the thing is, like, when you think of, you know, the leaders of Qatar or in Saudi Arabia, like, they feel so fucking entitled. And it's like the concept of free speech and free expression never even occurred to them. To them, it's like, what do you mean? It's obvious. I'm the ruler. They disagreed with me, and I'm the ruler. I'm the boss. I'm the leader. So if you disagree with me, I have the ability to lock you the fuck up. No, you jackass. But just picture it for a second to these people. Imagine the rules were reversed. So you're not the leader. You were the person who disagreed with the leader. Do you think that that leader would have a right to lock you up? Or picture it like in the world we live now. Somehow your ass gets demoted. Somebody's higher, you know, on the list than you. And then they look at you when you used to be the boss, and they say, well, now I'm the boss. I'm going to lock you up because you disagree with me. How would you feel? You'd say, whoa, I don't like this. Can we just have a disagreement, bro? Let's just leave it at that. So when it's for them, it's always, well, come on, leniency, let's be reasonable here. But when they get to crack down on everybody else, they're like, I cannot wait to crack down and fucking lock you up for disagreeing with me. Guys, this is not, like, this isn't an open question. This is savagery. This is barbarism. This is stupidity. Nobody should act like this, okay? And it's, we have to get the message out there and make it clear that one thing, or actually it's a group of things, but one title or banner, that's just non-negotiable all around the world and should be a given all around the world. And that's human rights. And one of the things that's part of human rights is free expression, free speech, free press. Free religion, too. You can't take your religion, push it on other people, but you're allowed to believe whatever you want to believe. But that, like, why can't we all just implement that and believe that? Instead, we have these fascistic, dictatorial, theocratic governments that are like, I'm like, fuck you. I'm just going to lock you up because I disagree. And it seems to me they're just so far gone, too. Because like I said, I don't think they ever had the thought even come into their mind of like, well, what if I don't lock them up for disagreeing with me? I think to them it's just a duh. Like, obviously, you disagree with me. I'm the boss. I'm going to lock you up. You did a poem I don't like. It's sad, man, because it's 2016 and this is the world that we live in. Human rights needs to become a non-negotiable thing all around the world. And stories like this make me believe that more than ever, because they think it's liberal to have somebody only spend 4 years in jail for a fucking poem. Okay, I'm out of time, guys, for the week. All right, I love all you. Everybody have a great weekend. And we'll see you on Monday. Mwah. Take care, y'all.